I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Psst. Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at MixingMusicPodcast.com. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me today, as always, is my lovely co-host, Luxury Lou.
You know, I do love a good sense of luxury, and I just bought a nice little addition to my console, and it wasn't cheap, but I'm very happy with it. Bought a new snake, and I won't mention numbers on it because it just hurts to remember how much I paid for it.
Dude, it's... Okay, first off, talking about luxury, I have to tell this story. We were hanging out in the studio and we were talking about how BS star signs is and the mysticism of star signs.
Horoscopes.
And this is the closest I've ever been to being convinced that there's any sort of truth to star signs. We were reading all of the other Pisces, Virgo, you know, and just reading the personalities. And they're all hyper-generalized things that anybody could have. Any stranger off the street could relate to any of these things, except for Taurus. Taurus is the one that's like, they're like groundedness and practicality and good smells, luxury and comforts, like sensory things.
Good tasting food
and just lots of sensory type things, which is like very different according to this website, like compared to the other 11 star signs. Yeah. And I'm like, that's crazy. And Lou says, I'm a Taurus, which is crazy because Lou is also autistic, which is like the funniest thing. The funniest actual. Anyway, ever since then, that was like the closest I've ever been to believing star signs is just the guy with Asperger's being Taurus. And I was like, all right, that's close. That might be the one for me. That made me laugh so hard. The actual dude with sensory stuff.
It's like, damn. Asperger's, Taurus. It now clicks.
That's so funny. Anyway, that's unrelated to what we were going to talk about. But every time I hear about star signs, I just remember Lou is a Taurus. And I'm like, you know what? I'll hear this person out.
Now, it came up the other day where I had used it as a joke where somebody's like, oh, Louis just really likes good food. You know, because we were like debating where to eat. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it's got to be good or else Louis's not going to want it. And I'm like, it's because I'm a Taurus. Sorry. I know. And they just looked at me weird. And I'm like, I don't think anybody else has read this one.
Dude, that's so funny. Anyway, good story for the beginning, unrelated story to the beginning of pod. Mm-hmm. All right, I think this episode of the podcast unofficially is called Are You Certain? We've talked about this. I would hope that it becomes a razor to people. We'll call it DK's razor. No, it's just a general Buddhist ideology thought here. Again, I've talked about it in the past when making razors are quick reminders to help you make decisions quickly. So like a Christian razor would be like, what would Jesus do? Like in a situation when you have to make a decision, like you would think, what would Jesus do in that situation, right? The typical razor of a Buddhist is, are you certain? right? Because especially coming from the lines of like Western philosophy and like Stoicism, for example, is all about like 95% of the problems that you encounter are completely in your brain and don't exist or are not important, right? So a lot of the stuff is like, for example, someone cuts you off on the road, they must be jerk. Are you certain? And no, there is no way to be certain. And even if you talk to that person and talk to them individually, they could be lying. There is no way to be certain. And this goes into other things too. And we are going to talk about this. There's a study that has become a little bit more popular that I encountered that I want to start with. And this does have a lot to do with mixing. Let's start off with the reason why I think this is such an important study related to mixing and why, especially as a mixer, this is important to understand and get into control, this need for controlling your insecurities and stuff. So real quick. Our co-host of the exclusive content, James, currently, without saying too much, has hired a mixing coach. And one of the things, exercise that he told me that he asked about is like, write down everything that triggers you. Like, write down your insecurities and things that trigger you to like, I don't know exactly the context or the specific details of this assignment that he was given. But I find it interesting that there is truth in the idea that what we do is subjective. Even the best mixer in the world is going to get it wrong sometimes. Even the worst mixer in the world is going to get it right sometimes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of flexibility and a lot of subjectivity in what we do. Logically, that makes a lot of sense, right? But yet sometimes we judge ourselves as if there is an objective truth, especially when we get mixed notes and we start to feel like they are personal attacks.
Yeah.
Which they rarely ever are. But it's very difficult for any mixer to perceive mixed notes not as personal attacks. Like, it takes a lot of security and, quite frankly, like training and understanding to develop a confidence as well as an understanding that they're not personal attacks. It's just words.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I think the reason that a lot of people get upset with it as like a quick gut reaction is because we also understand the amount of work that kind of went into a mix sometimes where you're like, oh man, I tried really hard on this one, but still wasn't enough, you know? And it's not always that case. Sometimes the notes are more based on creativity from the artist's end than it is about any kind of judgment at all.
Yeah. This is a real pervasive problem. And we want to talk about it. And because I think this will have to do with not just making better art, but also helping you with your career in the future. Taking something personally when they didn't intend it and lashing out because of it is one way to cut ties very easily. And people do it all the time. Constant. I did that not often, but I did that a few times when I was less secure, more insecure, and younger in my career, for sure. So let's talk about that. That's what today's episode is. So we're going to talk about something, and there's a couple key takeaways and a couple key examples. You should do your own experiment. This is from an experiment by Robert E. Kleck and Angelo Strenta in 1980. The official title of the report is Perceptions of the Impact of Negatively Valued Physical Characteristics on Social Interactions. Okay. And we're going to start off with this study that I find fascinating. This study was designed to investigate how perceived facial disfigurement affects social interactions and whether people who think they have a disfigurement experience more bias, even if none actually exists. Experiment setup. Female participants were recruited for the study. They were told that the experiment was about bias and discrimination based on facial disfigurement in social interactions. The researchers applied realistic-looking facial scars using theatrical makeup. Participants were shown their disfigured face in a mirror so they could see and internalize the scar. Just before the participants were sent to interact via job interviews or conversations, researchers secretly removed the scar under the pretense of touching it up. This meant that when all participants walked into the interactions, they actually had no scars at all, but they still believed they did. Participants then engaged in conversation with strangers, believing they were being observed for potential bias. These strangers had no idea that the participants thought they had a scar. After the interactions, participants consistently reported experiencing prejudice and negative reactions from the people they spoke with. Many claimed they were stared at more, treated differently, or subtly judged. However, since the scars were actually removed, the biases they perceived was entirely in their minds. This suggested that expectations of being judged shaped their interpretation of a neutral social interaction. So some of the implications of the study, we're going to talk about why this is, how this could be weaponized and used incorrectly, which we will get into. But let's talk about the general implications of the studies. The study shows that expectations of discrimination can influence how we interpret social interactions, even if no real discrimination occurs. If someone expects to be treated differently, they might become hyper aware of small behaviors, e.g. a pause in conversations, lack of eye contact, etc., and interpret them as prejudice. Self-fulfilling bias expectations. If we believe we will be judged, we may unknowingly act in ways that change the social interaction. For example, a person who expects discrimination might act more withdrawn or defensive, which could cause the other person to respond awkwardly, confirming the bias in their mind. This study has been referenced in discussions about race, gender, disability, and other social biases. It suggests that people who frequently experience discrimination may develop heightened sensitivity to potential prejudice, which can affect how they interpret interactions. Okay. This is how it can be weaponized. People that are dumb may weaponize this study and say that there's no such thing as discrimination. There's no such thing as real oppression. It's completely in the mind. That's not true, right? Real discrimination exists, and this study doesn't deny that, all right? Instead, it highlights an important psychological phenomenon. Sometimes people perceive discrimination even when it isn't present, but that doesn't mean discrimination isn't a major societal issue. The study shows that the expectation of bias can influence our perception, which is an important factor in understanding social psychology. Okay, so we talked about that. This is like a really big deal study. And obviously, we can go into the direction of race, right? Or just whatever the other things is, gender, disability, whatever. We could go in any direction. This is where we come into the idea of like certainty and the lack of, and the dangers of how the Western society and common sense encourages, motivates, and rewards certainty in many cases. It is naturally, I like to think that it is from a dualistic religious framework, but naturally likes to have, people like to settle in and feel comfortable in dualistic framing, which I think is oversimplistic and not true. Things are not certain. There is no, and I'm very against absolute, moral absolutism. This is something that you can look into, whatever that means. So I'm against that. There is no, I think right or wrong is contextual, and it is not absolute, predetermined by something else, right?
Yeah.
In some cases, a higher power or God or something like that. I don't believe in that. This is really, really important, to something to talk about, especially in the terms of mixing and within art. And what we do is, because when we go in to these mixes and these conversations with clients with any amount of insecurity, specifically subconscious ones, ones that we have not dealt with, that we don't realize that we have and we haven't confronted completely, we will unintentionally look for ways to take things personally, look for ways to perceive that people are talking down on us, which is not true, yeah. Which is not true. And what it does is it also creates this, I hate it so much, this like pandering culture where people feel the need to like be overly kind, which is kind of disingenuous.
Yeah.
like this overly effusive personality.
Kind of like the idea of the difference between nice and kind. There's a lot of nice people, you know, but genuine kindness is very different from being just nice all the time.
Yeah. And it feels ingenuine, which again is another perception, which is exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah.
But the problem is a lot of these perceptions create reactions that lose us jobs, that lose us gigs, that leave clients unhappy, unsettled, and that, more importantly, leaves us bitter. Audio engineers are, unfortunately, whether we want to admit it or not, are across the board famously known to be just bitter people.
Yeah.
It's not always true.
Not always true, but my favorite comment I ever get when working shows are like, man, you're like the nicest audio guy I've ever worked with. And I'm like, I mean, I've met a lot of nice guys. There's a lot of nice guys, but I also see how some of those nice guys react. Sometimes they're like, God damn it, they didn't do this. They didn't want me to do this. They can't even hold a fucking mic, this and that. I'm like, oh man, you complain a lot. I see it. Now I'm seeing the stereotype come through.
Yeah. And so it's like, it's this, that is a stereotype all the way. But yeah. I mean, even that, it's not good for engineers. It's not good. I mean, I guess it's kind of good because the one guy that is nice gets all the gigs.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes definitely everyone helps.
I mean, that's probably why we both have careers in this.
Yeah.
It's because it's hard. It's really easy to do well when you decide that not to be a dick.
I hate to admit it, but that's what I was when I took a break recently for a little bit, just to kind of catch my breath, so to speak. And one of the funny things is like, oh, I didn't know you weren't really taking projects like that right now. I was like, oh no, it's all good. They're like, oh, it's just we like working with you. Like you're a lot nicer than like some of the guys we've worked with. And I'm like, oh. Thanks. And I'm like, my kindness is the reason people want to work with me. Aw.
Yeah, so this is it. The episode is so simple because
yeah.
In everything, and even if these women in this test done in 1980, right? Which is aggressively a more prejudiced time. Like
but I hate to say it, but it's something you do see a lot where I've heard comments from across the board, guys and girls and all that, where a lot of times when they're newer at something, they think that everybody's judging them because they're newer. And they think that certain, like if you work in a team environment, this is a very common thing where you're part of a team. And if you're not as effective as other team members, you might not get all the most, I guess you could call it the most respected roles right away. Sometimes you just ask to coil up a cable at the studio. And that's kind of your role for now. While we kind of figure out what you're good at, what we kind of feel comfortable throwing your way for now. But it's not because we don't like you. It's sometimes we're just getting to know you, right? But sometimes that is misconstrued as hate from, you know, the people who have been around are doing well and they're looking at you as a potential new team member, but they haven't figured you out yet. You know, it's not hate. It's just, we don't know what you're good at. We don't know how you react around clients. We don't know how you kind of follow protocols. We just don't know you yet. So it's nothing personal. We just don't know you yet. But we hear it all the time where either people would complain to us about other places or other people in the industry. And sometimes what you hear as the complaint, you're like, that sounds like you took it personally when it wasn't supposed to be. Like, that sounds pretty normal. Like, sometimes the issues are actually so... not necessarily commonplace, like the issue isn't necessarily commonplace, but like the requests that are being made or the comments that are being made aren't actually personal, but it's being taken personal because you haven't matured in your role just yet, haven't matured in your career enough to understand that it's not personal, you know, and that's where a lot of people trip up on this issue where, you know, they're not sure. But because of insecurities can kind of run rampant. And now all of a sudden you really do believe that was a personal comment or a personal attack or whatever it might be. And it might cause you to trip on yourself and stop you from getting to the next stage in your career, or at least as soon as it possibly could have been.
Yeah. And so, there's a lot of dangers in this with not just insecurity, which we're talking about right now, but one of the points of that research that we saw was that when people have confirmation bias and expect to be treated differently, then they act more reserved and defensive, which makes the other person react in a way that seems more awkward. Mm-hmm. So it kind of has this like cyclical effect, right? Where it's just not good for both parties. So that's something to be to realize. So we want to get rid of insecurity. This is why we've talked on the podcast about how possibly like weekly like verbal therapy is just as good as any sort of gear that you can get in the studio, if not better, right?
Yeah.
Or like a trip to IKEA. The same reason why we say a trip to IKEA makes you more money
than a trip to Guitar Center.
Yeah.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's essential prenatal multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I think it's the same sort of thing. Like, not because necessarily that I believe so strongly in therapy and stuff, because no, insecurities and not dealing with the self directly correlates with how you perceive interactions in something subjective like art. Now, if this was more like scientific based, if what we did was more like cut and dry, this is what you do, this is the end results, this is input output, then I don't think it matters as much. But because art and music is so subjective, it is directly correlated. The end result is direct, and the interactions in between are directly correlated to things that we feel and things that we assume and the prejudices that we feel and the prejudices that we assume, right?
Yeah.
It is so important that we deal with this. So even if you don't do therapy, the thing that I'm suggesting, the challenge that I have for everyone is to constantly question yourself. Are you certain? Are you certain? When you look at a note and it says the kick drum, the drums are not big enough, they need to be bigger. Are you certain that that's a question of your own taste, that you're incapable of doing it? Are you certain? And most of the time, you cannot say that you are. There is no certainty. In fact, there's this Zen idea that like called the Daigi, which is this understanding. It's kind of, this might be a little bit too far down the line. I might have to pull back on this, but it's called the great doubt, Daigi, like big doubt. It's just understanding that nothing is certain, that everything is impermanent. Most things are not certain. And then when we assign certainty to things, that is when we lose perspective, yeah. Right? So like one of the things like what is the sound of one hand clapping? That is a question that is meant to cultivate doubt, great doubt. Mm-hmm. Or like if a tree falls and no one is around to hear it, doesn't make a noise. That's like a great doubt question type thing. But the point is like, are you certain? It's simple. Just ask yourself, are you certain all the time, constantly? Mm-hmm. Like that guy cut me off. It must have been an Asian driver. Are you certain? It might keep you from being racist, actually. But this is something that you should be constantly asking yourself. Obviously, directly leaning into therapy and figuring out and writing down your insecurities, or like kind of not writing them down necessarily, not that specific, or but like addressing your insecurities and dealing with them and learning to overcome and gaining confidence over time, which is another thing too. It's not necessarily a decision that you make. It is something that you have to do. Like the tens of thousands of hours doesn't lead to necessarily getting better. But it almost certainly leads to you have more surety in your skill.
Yeah.
There's like a more feeling of confidence.
There's a better sense of getting out of your own way so that you can focus on the progress, because especially in this industry, there's a lot of cases where like people see people blow up very quickly, right? But we were talking about this the other day between a cousin and mine. There's this rapper named Currency. I think he's dope. I think he's cool, but he's been around for a while. And we were talking about, he's like, I feel like he's just getting his flowers. I feel like everything's just been happening for him. Like, Well, that's the power of consistency. And that's kind of the name of the game with our industry. Everybody assumes that there's blowups and all that. And if you just hunker down, if you just buy this one gear, if you just do this one mix, like your career is set for the rest of your life. And there are case scenarios where that one mix blew up and that guy's got a career or whatever. Cool. But majority of the time, it's just focusing, hunkering down, due diligence, communication, turning things in on time, and just making sure that you're doing things. But some of the biggest things that get in our way is ourself and our opinion of ourself, or what we think other people's opinion of us is. So, you know, we always talk about like the importance of like being confident, being sure, and like the gear is not everything, but one of the biggest weapons against your own career is taking things way too personally or not really understanding what the requests in front of you are. And because of that, you have to ask yourself, like, are you sure that's what they meant? Are you certain? Like, not every revision request is personalized. Not every time that somebody says, hey, we feel like we need to re-record the vocals, is it like just saying that you couldn't mix them right and now they got to do them or whatever. It's, listen, get out of your own way. Your career is right in front of you, but a lot of times you're standing in your own way.
Yeah, a lot of times we are standing in our own way. And so that's the thing. Again, we've talked about this time and time again. There is no amount of how to compress vocals, how to EQ yeah. vocals, how to use parallel compression that will remove that inevitable insecurity. Even if you're making music for yourself and mixing your own music to release yourself, there is an undeniable sense of insecurity, wondering if it's good enough, wondering if it could be better, not being the sensation of it not being strong enough or good enough to release. And then if you're doing it for other people, there's the sensation of everything is hypercritical and overpersonal, which is just not true. There's nothing. And again, these are all cyclical things that do not go away until you partially decide to, but until you deal with yourself.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the name of this guy, but he's a friend of House Engineer. Waves reposts stuff all the time, like steal my settings, you know, for like live audio using Waves plugins and all that. So if you ever follow Waves, you might have seen him. But he recently posted in his stories, like, let's talk compressors. And he just would make a poll, VCA, FET, Opto, or Verimute, and then he would list what sources per story. And there was a lot of people voting on it where it's like, okay, what about electric guitars? And you would see like FET or Opto being like the two main picks, a few Verimus and a few VCAs were selected, whatever. And this happened for various different sources, differences and choices. And then he would list his own after, where like sometimes it aligned with the poll, sometimes it didn't align with the poll. But I remember seeing people just kind of like a little bit upset about this. Like somebody had made like a response story saying like, oh, these are dumb questions anyways, this and that. I'm like, you know, it's kind of funny that you felt personally attacked that his opinion of what he likes on a source didn't align with yours. Like, it's not a right or wrong. It's just a difference in choice creatively,
yeah.
You know, and it's something so mundane that if you showed me yours and I thought it sounded good, I almost don't care what type of compressor you did use. I just care that I liked it. That's it. So there's too many things to be upset about in the world, that your compressor choices and this and that, or your taste and how much distortion on a drum parallel bus, whether it's right or wrong. It's like, just enjoy what you're doing. Just enjoy yourself. Amen. This is the career that people actually get to say is like, you know, as hard as you work, people will always be like, they're so lucky for getting to work in music. It's a lot of work. Sometimes it's a lot of mental stress, especially if you can't see that you're kind of getting in your own way. And just kind of remember that when you're looking at revision notes or you're getting critiques or something, or if you think you're being critiqued for whatever reason when you walk in a room, that's usually not the case. And most people in our industry are just as insecure as you are. I hate to say it. It's like going to the goddamn gym. Like, nobody cares what your workout is or if you're doing the form right or wrong half the time. Once in a while, I look around and I'm like, ooh, that person's going to hurt themselves, but I'm not about to walk over there and critique you and make you feel bad for doing it wrong. It's like, I just hope they get better over time.
Oh, dude, but, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure you've seen it too, DK, going to the gym and you're like, wow, that person might hurt themselves. But I'm not about to stand here and be like, you're an idiot. What's wrong with you? You know, it's no.
Yeah. If you're just learning. Once you kind of reframe and realize that everyone else might be just as insecure, if not more than you.
Yeah.
Whether they realize it or not.
Yeah.
Kind of humanizes everyone. Like, one of the things that, like, helps me, this sounds so bad and biased, mm-hmm. but if I, like, do whenever it. I go to networking events.
Do you imagine everybody in their underwear?
No, I don't do that. Yeah, I do something possibly less ethical. Because what I do is when I go to, like, network events, like the Grammy events and stuff like that, and I know I should be reaching out to people and introducing myself to people, but it's, like, really scary. I just realize, you know, everybody's trying to act cool. Everybody's trying to look cool. But like inside, everybody's just a little bit autistic. If I like say that to myself, if I say that's like everybody's just a little bit autistic and awkward, then yeah. I feel like, oh, okay. Then it makes everybody a little bit more approachable. You're like, hey, man.
Yeah.
Yo. And that's how I do it, right? But it's just realizing like if you realize everybody else is a little insecure, even the ones that are doing really well. Especially the ones that are doing really well.
Yeah.
It kind of humanizes everyone and it develops a sense of compassion and understanding for everybody. So anyway, let's talk about I want to talk about some practical takeaways and some advice. Is that okay,
I got
Luke?
One.
Yeah? Let's start off with yours then.
Sometimes people are busy. And this is not like me personally saying, like, if I don't respond to you, it might just mean I'm busy. It's even when I don't get a response right away. Sometimes people are busy. And unless it's directly related to the work you have on the table with that person, they may have something that's a little more pressing in front of them that requires their attention and their time at this moment. A good example of this is if you're ever working with management, and it's just on something, maybe you have a question, you've got something that you want to bring up or talk about, or maybe you're just reaching out for some advice. They may not get back to you all the time because if a good manager doesn't just have one artist, a good manager doesn't have artists that don't do anything. They are very busy people. So with that said, sometimes if you're going back and forth with notes on something and it seems like people are taking forever to get back to you or something like that. It's not that your time is not worth it in their eyes. It just might be that they're a little bit busy in this moment. You know, taking people's time and considering it as like, why aren't they responding to me? It's like, listen, you may not be the most important thing of their day today, but that doesn't mean that you don't hold value or some level of importance in the grand scheme of what they're working on with you. They just might be a little busy. Because I've heard people in the past say like, man, it's like people don't get back to you. They don't do this. They don't do that. And sometimes, granted, some people are just bad communicators. Sometimes that's the case. But most times when I've had this concern, and you actually take a step back to look at it, it's like, oh, there's a lot that they are doing that has nothing to do with whatever song I'm mixing for them. It has nothing to do with whatever, you know, this artist wants and if they're going to approve it or not. They have five other artists that might also have some time pressing things needed. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I had a song that was released under Pulse recently that I mixed a year ago and I didn't actually mix it for release. And in my head, I'm like, hey, don't you want it to actually sound better? They're like, why? What's wrong with it? I didn't even know you mixed it. You know, half the times there's a lot of information that's flying past them because they're so busy that they just have to keep up with what's in front of them. So not getting immediate responses from people is not a sign of disrespect. Sometimes it's just a matter of like, hey, I'm really sorry. I just got back to you. What's going on? You know, it might be time pressing for you or you might think that it's a lot more important than it really is. But sometimes they just don't have time and it's not personal.
Amen. That's like a big, big thing. I think about this quite often. This is a big issue. It's not personal. It's not personal. It's not meant to be. When someone, here's the thing with going with your example that you said earlier. When someone doesn't text you back because they're probably busy,
mm-hmm.
but you project and perceived that that they are ignoring you and ghosting you,
mm-hmm.
hear me out on this. It's probably, you probably are projecting that and thinking that because that's what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when we talk about previous advice on a different episode, which is the best thing that you can do for yourself is to clear your conscience, to keep it clear, to remove reason to project what other people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
You should be responsible. You should have integrity. You should be trustworthy. You should be responsible. And that's for your own sake. The most judgmental people that I know are first most judgmental to themselves and struggle with deep feelings of inferiority, insecurity.
Yeah.
This is a normal thing. It is a classic projection with lots of data to back it up.
A friend of mine recently posted something that ties into what we just are talking about right now, which was he said, I've noticed that the busiest people are the ones that respond the fastest.
Amen. Yeah. That's true. That's true. And there's a reason for that too. They're busy because they respond quickly.
Yeah.
And in a good way, right? So
yeah.
It's really important. So the point is not about not ghosting people. That's not the point. The point is we project onto others what we do ourselves.
Yeah.
If you are constantly telling white lies, it is naturally difficult to trust anyone.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that there are occasions when it is okay to be immoral or to lie, then it will be, there is a correlation to how easily you trust others and take things at face value, take their words at face value. So here's the thing. So it's not about not ghosting people. It's not about messaging people quickly. It's about removing any sort of reason for projection, removing any sort of projection, working on self, for self. If you want to be less judgmental to yourself and if you struggle a lot with insecurity, then focus on yourself and you'll realize that you'll start to actually trust people more, that you'll realize people are great.
Yeah.
The more you can love yourself, the more that it'll go into others. This is like basic psychology. So this is really important. So whether or not we recognize, this is something I posted about on Instagram and Twitter, is like whether or not we recognize it, it is always in our best interest to be kind.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because that perception of kindness goes back to ourselves. It's all cyclical. We cannot hide from it. And if you are religious, then that is scriptural, you know? And if not, it is psychological. It's true. It's backed by science and religion. So don't do that.
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. So let's go into some more practical advice. Here's what I think, dude. First off, I have some practical experience, practical advice here. Number one, you know, you got to reframe mixed notes. They're not attacks, they're requests. So like the feedback is not about, it's about the mix. It's not about you. Feedback is about the mix. It's not about you. A client asking for change doesn't mean they hate your work. It just means they have a different vision. And that has nothing to do with your personal opinion or taste. They're not attacking you. Try rewording mixed notes in your head. Instead of, they don't like my mix, think they're asking for a different approach. That's number one. Number two, learn to pause before reacting. And this goes beyond mixing too. When you get a mixed note that triggers insecurity, don't respond immediately. Give it a few minutes. Don't respond immediately. That's some great advice. Ask yourself, am I feeling defensive or is this actually a reasonable request? You never, ever, ever want to respond reactively, especially when you're feeling defensive.
Yeah.
If you're unsure about a note, ask for a clarification instead of assuming the worst. That's a great thing. Ask for clarification. Have them reword it. You know, it is always, people should be improving their verbal IQ or their verbal articulation to say things with taste and tact and consider the other people's emotions. But it is not their responsibility to do so.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It is not an enforced responsibility for other people to say things better. It is our responsibility to understand them more neutrally. Because we can't control other people, but we can control ourselves. It is not the other person's responsibility. It is our responsibility. That being said, we should all on an individual level continue to try to make our language better and how we communicate better. So anyway, asking for clarification. What was I going to say? Am I feeling defensive? Yeah. Just don't, like, if you're feeling, defensive or taking things personally is usually a sign of something that is, what is the word I'm looking for? Unresolved trauma or unresolved personal issues. And those are good things to resolve or to think about. Always ask your, number three, always ask yourself, are you certain? Mixing is subjective. There are no absolute truths. If you're resisting a note, ask yourself, am I sure this is the best way, or is it just the way that I like it? The best mixers adapt without losing their core sound. That's important. Also, try to adapt with by losing your core sound. It's like really hard, actually. It's like kind of impossible. Therapy or self-reflection is a better investment than more gear. More plugins won't fix emotional resistance to feedback. Yeah. If you struggle with criticism, consider journaling, mindfulness, or therapy to build resilience. Yeah. Confidence comes from self-awareness, not just technical skills. And number five, separate self-worth from your work. A bad mix doesn't mean you're a bad engineer. Avoid phrases like, I suck at mixing. Instead, say, I can improve my approach. The best mixers aren't the ones who never get notes. They're the ones who handle notes professionally. That's worth repeating. The best mixers aren't the ones who never get notes. They're the ones who handle notes professionally. Holy shit. Time and time and time again. There are like some of our good friends that have multi-platinum, multi-Grammys. We talk about this. They don't not get notes. They get notes, and some of them talk about how brutal their notes can be.
Yeah.
But they're like, they're the one thing that is consistent with every single interview that we do with people that are doing way better than us is, and beyond, is just they're actually able to separate their work from their personal feelings and personal emotions in like the healthiest ways. That is so huge. Number six, develop a feedback process. Instead of dreading feedback, build it into your workflow. Treat mix notes as a collaborative process. Ask questions, suggest alternatives, and make it a conversation. You know, I do this automatically with when I send out my V1s. Oftentimes, and it's also to like open up a sense of collaborations, because sometimes the artists and producers are aware that typically engineers do get offended and take things personally. So they become, again, defensive and more awkward by nature, like that cyclical thing that we learned about in that study, because they're afraid, they don't want to offend anybody. So they kind of like compensate for that, which kind of makes this overly effusive, like brown nosing, pandering kind of approach, which is less honest, which is not for the art, because we're here to make better art. And when you're like overly effusive, serving the art, the song.
Yeah.
Right. So in order to serve the song, you want to create an environment of honesty. So what I do is when I send out V1s, I say, I have no ego. I'm very, very, especially for first time clients. I have no ego. I am very open to collaboration, and I am here to like work with you to make this the best song that it can possibly, kind of reframing it to make sure that my objective is to make it the best song possible. And I'm letting you know that I believe that this is collaboration. I say collaborative process or collaboration from the get-go. And then have a systematic approach to revisions. For example, I'll make changes based on the artist's visions, but if something compromises quality, I'll explain why. Part of the thing that is true, and this is something that we need to balance, Lou, that we've talked about this before, is the kind of the concept that sometimes people pay us for pushback.
Yeah.
So we need to determine when is a moment of a personal bias and defensive nature, or when something is actually not serving the art and when it's our job to speak up. But if you can't separate personal insecurities from the art, then this is not something that you can do, like objectively.
Yeah. So I had this brought up on a phone call just this past weekend. where I mastered a song for a client of mine, and I've done a bunch of records with him already, so it's not like we haven't worked together before. But when he brings me notes, I take care of them. That's not a problem. And typically, I might communicate if I think something doesn't really work in favor, or if I feel strongly that, hey, I think that this change actually helped it more than I think you're giving it the opportunity to. And not to say that I think you're wrong, but rather, hey, I feel like for what you communicated you want, this change actually lent itself to that benefit. But this most recent master I did for him, I thought his mix was great. I genuinely thought it was great. So what did I do? I, you know, did my thing where I get it a little bit louder than I typically would like it to be. Like, you know, there is a slight need for clients to want to hear things louder than they normally could get it when they hire a mastering engineer. It's just kind of inherently part of the job sometimes. But they also don't want you to change the mix when they really like the mix. Now, he didn't tell me that he really likes the mix. He told me, do what you do best. I have no notes for you. I just want you to give me what Lou thinks is best on this one. And what I thought was best is what he handed me. It was one of those kind of tracks where it's big 808 West Coast low-end hip-hop with some hi-hats as the groove and then like sparse instrumentation in the middle. You know what I mean? Dude, it's one of those records where it's hard to get it loud, but you don't want to sacrifice the dynamics of the low-end. So,
dude, it takes a lot of security and confidence in yourself to realize I don't need to do anything to this.
Exactly. So the issue that came up was he gives me a call 3 days later after saying, dude, this was perfect. Now, I did do a slight taper in the low end to try not to sacrifice dynamics, but try to get some headroom out of it. I did do a little bit of limiting that darkened the hi-hat. So I had to rebrighten and, you know, counteract it to get it back to where it was. And overall, the song came out cool, in my opinion, and he said it was perfect. But a couple days later, he gives me a call and says, what would you have done different had you been a little more creative with your choice? And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I just don't want you to feel limited in the things you can do when you're working with me. Like, I know that a lot of mastering guys get told, don't change my mix, but I trust and respect your opinion. What would you have done differently? And I had to tell him on the phone, I'm like, I know in the past on other mixes, I've made more changes because I felt that it would support them in a commercial sense. But in this one, I actually genuinely didn't have any major notes. Like the few things I did was like maybe notch out a decibel at like 500 hertz just because I felt like the vocal was a little honky. But, you know, that was it. You know, that was probably the most major change I did. But other than that, I thought you had a great mix. And he, in his head, he's like, he's not giving me any notes. Did he just give up? And it's like, no, you actually genuinely had a good mix. Like, because that's kind of the mistake some people have of working with mixing or mastering engineers. Sometimes the mix engineer gets a record that was really well produced and balanced by the producer. And the changes that we make may not be as critical or as audible because sometimes making more changes takes away from the record. And so this sense of insecurity of like, I thought I was going to hear a big change. It's like, you actually did a good job. I think your insecurity is showing a little bit, but you did a good job.
Yeah, that's another roundabout way. I mean, we've talked about on the earlier episodes of the pod when I talked about my experience with Mix with the Masters in France in 2019 with Leslie Brathwaite, and he had no feedback for me. And I was upset. I was like, why do you have no feedback for me?
My school paid all this money for me to come out here for you to critique me.
And you have no real critiques? Like, that's crazy. Like,
you denied me my critique.
Yeah, like, dang. Like,
you did a good job, DK. Wear that shit
on your chest.
Yeah,
so it's like, and I was not able to accept that. And so there's something to be said about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, to finish this up, the last advice, number 7, is more work equals more luck, which equals more confidence.
Yeah.
The more you mix, the more confident you become in handling feedback. Volume beats perfection. Your ability to detach from a single mix improves when you have multiple projects. And lastly, repetition makes criticism easier to process.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that.
So it's not the argument of quantity, quality over quantity, or quantity over quality is a dumb argument, because quantity creates quality.
Yeah.
It's you're looking at the, you're framing things incorrectly. And we're not even going to get into like perfectionism and how that stems from feelings of inferiority and insecurity. We're not going to get into that. And how you can utilize that even. How you can utilize that. There's an interview with Benny Blanco. Is it Benny Blanco? What's his name?
Benny Blanco would be his name. If you're speaking about Benny Blanco.
Like the big songwriter, producer?
Yeah. Yeah. The guy that's married to Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has an interview where he talks about how his perfectionism is part of the reason why collaborating with very commercially successful people, like, it's a good balance, because these people don't have the time to spend on these songs, and they just kind of come in, come out, go in, go out, 30 minutes, 1 hour, be done. And like, his natural perfectionism is actually a good thing that helps him utilize his skills better. And it's like one of the things that works well for him. You know, it's like, it's not necessarily weakness. It's one of his strengths. And he, at least he's used it in that way and been able to balance in that way. Anyway, so something to think about. I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to that. Because I'm not a natural perfectionist. And am I?
I would say that you're naturally a weirdo.
Thank you, dude.
Just a weird little guy.
That being said, you know, as much as we talk about therapy, I do want to balance this out, because as much as we talk about therapy and mental wellness and how this affects our works, one, I think it's important because it affects our work. I serve art. I am here for art, right? And so I do think therapy helps us make more money, which helps us create better art to a certain degree.
Yeah.
I'm not like, yeah, for the job, for the money, sure. But at the same time, I am also, there's a part of me that is the natural David Goggins type hard ass. Again, like, I'm attempting in next week, which is crazy to say, I'm not ready. I'm actually not emotionally ready for it like I was last year. But next week, I'm attempting another 100-mile ultra marathon. Like, I'm that guy that could do hard things,
mm-hmm.
right? That is naturally really ambitious, but not, it's really strange, because this is a whole nother topic, which is the idea of like, it must be genetic or something. It must be from, I don't know what it is, because my natural ambition, I am not a Slytherin. I am not someone that is like ambitious because I'm greedy or want something. Like, I'm just really impulsive and curious about how far I can go. I like difficult video games because they're really engaging with me, is in like a weird autistic sense.
Yeah.
Like, not because I want to prove to anybody else or myself that I'm better. It's not about a superiority complex. It's this really strange thing that I've had to come to terms with, because I've always wondered, why am I so ambitious? I must be so insecure. But I've recently determined that that's not the case at all. I'm just naturally ambitious, and that's what it is, and that's okay. I like to do really impulsive, crazy, stupid things that in retrospect look really ambitious and look really courageous. But it's, quite frankly, in the moment, like, it's really impulsive. Like, me signing up for the first 100-miler last year was really impulsive. It's more based on curiosity of whether or not I can even do it, rather than some sort of strict, I need to do this, or I need to prove this to myself, or anything like that. Yeah, dude. Anyway, so to be fair, like, as much as I am all for wellness, I am also more for personal responsibility. So I am all for taking on personal responsibility and choosing your sacrifices. And because I'm very much a fan. The one cognitive bias that I always talk about all the time is the just world hypothesis. There's no such thing as a just and fair world. And that's hard to accept, because that goes against our preferred narratives. And fair, this is really interesting. I was researching this recently. In Western philosophy and Western common sense, fairness is a big part of our value system.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, let me talk. I think this actually has to do with this. Let me talk about this, because I was talking about this. I do ChatGPT for like supplemental learning, and like, okay, tell me more about this. Show me data on this and whatnot. It's not so good on like modern news, because yeah, for like news and stuff, but it's better for like history and stuff. So I was talking about like, morality from the East and how morality is viewed in the West and in the East, universal ethics, moral relativism, which one is correct, which obviously none is better. But in the West, is much more better about justice, equality, rule of law. Because in the East, because it's all for one mentality, if people get left behind, leaving people behind serves the group better, that is a natural course of action. Where in the Western concept, that is a very bad thing to do. It's not fair. We will never leave anyone behind, right?
Yeah.
And that has some negative things where like being so open to leave someone behind to serve the greater good, this natural utilitarianism is also in the West considered bad, but in the East is not as considered bad. Extreme forms of utilitarianism is bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
As we saw in World War II and other things, historical thing. But in general, like a balanced, nuanced form of utilitarianism in Japan, for example, is good. It gives meaning and purpose,
yeah,
and fulfillment. So it's just like this natural moral differentiation. What was the point that I was getting at? Anyway, I was thinking about this. Personal responsibility, right? Obviously, there is oppression, there is discrimination, there is things that are out of our control. But just like the Stoics say, it's best to take control what you can. And the one thing you could do that is just take on and commit to personal responsibility and integrity. There is nothing that you can change. That's not true. You're not completely powerless, but it starts off with personal integrity. And that's a great foundation. At the same time, people love to weaponize personal responsibility, and that's immoral and incorrect. That's not true. Don't do that. There is actual bad things in this world. Oppression, discrimination. Don't weaponize personal responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But according to that study that we said earlier today, being overpowered with the assumption that there is discrimination does change how we perceive interactions and how we project these interactions to others and how they in turn reactively interact with us, which will cyclical. It's a down circle, man. It just keeps going down. It keeps going down. You keep thinking, I am oppressed. I am discriminated. It's just confirmation bias over and over and over again. And there is a balance at a certain point. You have to ask yourself, are you certain?
Yeah.
And there is a point of certainty where there is none of. Was that person who was rude to you in this store actually racist? Are you certain? Most of the time, on case-by-case scenarios, there is very little to no certainty.
Yeah.
Do not project that. All right. Sorry, ending the episode. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to sign up for our Patreon. We got a bunch of new subscribers. In fact, maybe we should do a little shout out here.
Ooh.
Let me do a little shout out. Is that cool? Sorry, this is at the end of the episode. We should have been doing this at the beginning of the episode, but I'm just going to say first names of people that signed up recently, some new members. Shout out to our Patreon members. Hold on. Where are they at? Oops. Shout out to our freak. Where are they? What is going on?
Plot twist. There are no members.
I'm just trying to find the list. There's somebody that even, Lou, talk for a couple minutes while I find it.
Sure.
just talk. Dead space. Hold on. I'm about to find it. No, I found it. I already found it. All right, dude. All right, shout out to Christian for even actually giving us a monthly tip. Dominic, Adio, Elias, Flopsy, we got Jared, Jason, and Mighty Maid, and Yannick. Thanks for joining our Patreon. We hope to see a few more. Again, once we get a bunch more people onto the list, those are our newest members. Once we get a bunch more onto the list, then I think we're going to have a lot more enticing things like merch and exclusive live streams and maybe even some exclusive stems and giveaways and stuff that I might use. So I might start asking clients for permission, for a written permission to use their stuff for our Patreon. So they could practice mixing. Maybe practice stems for our Patreon. That's a good idea.
That'd be cool.
If you have any ideas for what we should do for our Patreon members, you know, hit me up on the Discord or on Instagram or just on the Patreon. Sign up for free because we do have free things too. If you sign up for a free member of our Patreon, you get access to a couple free PDFs and a couple other free things. So just go check it out. And on that note, Lou, is there anything you want to say before we sign out?
Yeah. Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive.